This article is brought to you by the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time, The Black Book of Eamon Blackthorne. Because the right words, at the right moment, change everything. How to discuss work-life boundary violations with a manager who expects constant availability. A direct, step-by-step method for protecting your time without damaging your career. In short, discussing a work-life boundary violation with a manager who expects constant availability requires preparation, specific language, and a focus on sustainable performance rather than personal grievance. Name the pattern clearly, not just the feeling it produces. Come with a proposed solution, not only a complaint. The goal is a working agreement, not a confrontation. Definition: a work-life boundary violation is any pattern in which a manager or employer encroaches on an employee's personal time, typically through after-hours messages, weekend calls, or an implicit expectation of constant availability outside contracted working hours. There is a particular kind of exhaustion that sets in when you never fully stop working, not because the tasks never end, but because the signal never goes quiet. A message arrives at 10 on a Sunday night. Another at 6 on a Monday morning. No single message is unreasonable on its own, and yet across weeks and months, something essential is being consumed. You raise it once, carefully, and your manager looks slightly puzzled, as if you have described a problem that does not quite exist. So you absorb it. You adapt. And then, one morning, you sit down at your desk already depleted, and you know something has to change. That is the specific difficulty at the heart of this article: how to have the work-life boundary conversation with a manager who does not see the violation, or who sees it and expects you to meet the standard regardless. This is not a complaint session. It is a difficult conversation that requires courage, preparation, and a clear method. What follows is the process I have refined across decades of getting this kind of conversation wrong, then gradually right. Why this conversation feels impossible to start. The power imbalance makes this hard. You are asking someone who controls your career to change behaviour that benefits them. That is not a small thing to ask, and pretending otherwise does not help. There is also a cultural layer. In many workplaces, constant availability is treated as a signal of commitment. If you push back, you risk being seen as the person who's less dedicated, less invested, less promotable. That fear is real, and it keeps a lot of people silent for a long time. And then there is the ambiguity. Unlike a dispute over pay or a formal policy, work-life boundary violations are often informal. Nothing was written down. No rule was broken. The pattern crept in gradually, and now it feels almost normal, even to you. That ambiguity makes the conversation harder to open, because you're not pointing at a clear line that was crossed. Understanding why it is hard matters, because it shapes how you prepare. This is not a simple grievance conversation. It is a careful negotiation between your needs and someone else's expectations, conducted across a genuine power gap. You need a method that respects all of that. Before you say a word, the groundwork that makes it work. Do not walk into this conversation without completing three things first. Document the pattern. Vague discomfort will not move a practical manager. Specific evidence will. Before you meet, write down 5 to 10 concrete examples: a message received at 11 p.m. on a Tuesday, a call on a bank holiday, an email chain that started at 7 a.m. and carried an implicit expectation of immediate response. You do not need to present all of these. You need them so you are anchoring the conversation in facts, not feelings. Clarify your ask. Know what you want the outcome to be before you walk in. Do you want a defined cut-off time after which messages are not expected to receive same-day responses? A shared understanding that weekends are genuinely off. A protocol for what counts as a genuine emergency versus a routine request. The more specific your proposed solution, the more productive the conversation will be. Choose the right setting. This conversation deserves a private, scheduled meeting, not a hallway exchange or the end of a one-to-one that was already about something else. Request a dedicated slot. 15 to 20 minutes is enough if you are well prepared. How to have the work-life boundary conversation. A step-by-step process. Step 1. Open with purpose, not apology. Too many people begin this conversation by softening it until it disappears. They spend the first 2 minutes reassuring the manager that everything is fine before eventually, haltingly, arriving at the point. That approach signals that you yourself do not believe your concern is legitimate. Open cleanly and directly instead. Name the purpose of the meeting within the first 30 seconds. Try this. I wanted to talk with you about how we handle contact outside working hours. I have noticed a pattern over the last few months that I want to address, and I would like us to find an arrangement that works for both of us. That is it. No apology. No excessive softening. Direct, respectful, forward-looking. Step 2. Name the pattern with a specific example. Do not describe how the situation makes you feel before you have described what the situation actually is. Managers, particularly those who have not noticed the pattern, need the facts first. Choose one clear, recent example and state it plainly. Try this. Last Tuesday, I received a message at 9:45 in the evening asking for input on the client report. The week before, there was a call on Saturday morning about the schedule change. These are not isolated incidents. This has become a regular pattern. You are not accusing. You are describing. The tone should be steady, not charged. Step 3. Explain the impact on your work, not just your well-being. This is where many people lose the rim. They move directly from describing the pattern to expressing personal distress, and the manager hears it as a lifestyle preference rather than a professional concern. That is a mistake, because most managers care deeply about your output. Use that. Connect the work-life boundary pattern to your performance and sustainability. Try this. When I cannot fully disconnect in the evenings, I'm less sharp the following day. I want to do my best work for this team, and I'm finding it harder to sustain that when I'm effectively on call around the clock. You are not complaining about being tired. You are making a performance argument. That lands differently. If you are thinking about how to start a difficult conversation that is blocking your team's effectiveness, the same principle applies. Lead with professional impact, and the conversation stays grounded. Step 4. Make your specific ask. This is the step most people skip because it feels too bold. They describe the problem and then wait, as if the manager will intuit the solution. Do not wait. State clearly what you are asking for. Try this. What I am asking for is this message is after 7 p.m. would not require a response until the following morning, unless it is a genuine emergency that we agree on together. I am happy to define what counts as an emergency if that would help. A specific ask does two things. It gives the manager something concrete to respond to, and it demonstrates that you have thought this through. You are not venting. You are proposing. Step 5. Listen fully before you respond. After you make your ask, stop talking. Let the manager respond. Do not fill the silence with qualifications or retreats from what you just said. Your manager may push back. They may express surprise. They may tell you the nature of the role requires flexibility. Let them finish. Genuinely hear it. Then, if the pushback is substantive, ask a question rather than defending your position immediately. Try this. I hear that flexibility matters. Can you help me understand which situations genuinely require an evening response versus which ones could wait until morning? I want to get that right. This is a tool for opening genuine dialogue, not a tactic for winning an argument. The deal method for resolving workplace conflicts offers a useful structure here. When both sides have expressed their position, the resolution lies in the space between listening and negotiating. Step 6. Negotiate toward a working agreement. You are not here to win. You are here to reach a clear, shared understanding that both of you can respect. That may mean some compromise on your part. Perhaps the manager genuinely does need to reach you occasionally in the evenings, and you can accept that if it is genuinely occasional, not nightly. Perhaps a clear definition of urgent would allow you to set your phone aside confidently, knowing that anything below that threshold can wait. The goal is a specific, mutual agreement, not a vague promise to be more mindful, but a clear understanding of what is expected from both sides. Step 7. Confirm the agreement and put it in writing. Before you leave the meeting, restate what was agreed in your own words. This closes the loop and prevents the conversation from dissolving into ambiguity within a week. Try this. So to confirm, messages after 7 p.m. will not require a response until the following morning unless flagged as urgent. And we have agreed that urgent means a client-facing issue or a deadline that falls within 12 hours. Is that right? After the meeting, send a brief email summarizing the agreement. Keep it matter-of-fact, not legalistic. Something as simple as, just wanted to note what we agreed in our conversation today, so we are both working from the same understanding. This is not distrust. It is good communication. It also gives you something to refer back to if the pattern resurfaces. For situations where a manager consistently dismisses concerns, The value method for advocating with managers who dismiss problems offers a structured way to maintain your position without escalating unnecessarily. When the conversation happens remotely. Remote and hybrid work has made this conversation both more necessary and more awkward. When your manager is in a different time zone, or when the informal rhythms of an in-person office no longer exist, the boundaries between work and everything else blur badly. A few adjustments help. First, the written record matters even more when working remotely. After a boundary agreement, update your working hours in whatever communication platform your team uses. Make the agreement visible, not just verbal. Second, if your manager is in a different time zone, be specific about whose time zone governs the agreement. This is a practical detail that prevents misunderstanding down the line. Third, consider that remote managers sometimes send messages outside hours not because they expect an immediate response, but because that is when they are working. It is worth naming this directly. I want to make sure I understand, when you send a message in the evening, are you expecting a reply that same evening, or is it fine to respond the following morning? Sometimes the answer surprises people. Sometimes the boundary violation is partly a perception issue. Sometimes it is not. Knowing which one you are dealing with changes the conversation. When handling conflict during meetings about workload or availability, these same remote-specific considerations apply. Be explicit about expectations that in-person teams might leave unspoken. A quick note before we continue. Most people leave the hardest conversations for last and regret the words they used when they finally had them. The best-selling book Say It Right Every Time gives you 115 tested scripts for those exact moments, the ones that shape careers, relationships, and how people remember you. Get your copy at emonblackthorne.com. Now, back to the article. Where people get this wrong. The mistake. Raising the issue in the middle of a busy day, without preparation, in a tone that reads as complaint rather than conversation. Why it happens. Frustration builds until it spills. The next message arrives at an inconvenient moment, and the response comes outcharged and reactive. What to do instead? Wait for a scheduled harm moment. If you feel yourself about to raise it reactively, note it down and save it for the proper conversation. The mistake. Describing feelings extensively without naming the pattern or the ask. Why it happens. It feels safer to say I feel overwhelmed than to say I'm asking you to stop messaging me after 7 p.m. What to do instead. Lead with the specific pattern and the specific ask. Feelings are relevant context, not the main argument. The mistake. Accepting a vague resolution, such as I will try to be more aware of it, and treating that as a closed conversation. Why it happens. The tension of the meeting makes any indication of agreement feel like a relief. You accept what is offered, and hope it will stick. What to do instead. Press gently for specifics before you leave. A vague promise is not an agreement. It is a postponement. For additional context on disagreements that remain unresolved after a first attempt, using the deal method to address feedback disagreements at work offers a repair process worth reading. And if tensions persist and surface in shared meetings, de-escalating arguments during meetings covers the techniques for keeping the temperature down when the room gets charged. Your pre-conversation preparation checklist. Use this before you walk into the meeting. It takes 10 minutes, and it will make the conversation significantly more focused. Number 1. Write down 3 to 5 specific examples of the boundary pattern, with dates where possible. Number 2. Confirm your specific ask in one sentence. Read it aloud. If it sounds reasonable spoken plainly, it is ready. Number 3. Identify 1 or 2 areas where you're willing to compromise, and know where your limit is. Number 4. Prepare your opening line. Practice it until it sounds natural, not rehearsed. Number 5. Decide in advance how you will respond if the manager pushes back hard. What will you say? What will you not concede? Number 6. Plan to follow up in writing after the conversation. Have a short, factual email in mind. When you are preparing to advocate for your broader needs at a senior level, using the value method to advocate for your team's needs with senior leadership is a natural companion to the process above. The thing most people discover afterward. Here is what I have seen, over and over, across decades of watching people finally have the conversation they had been avoiding. The manager, more often than not, did not fully realize the pattern had become what it had. Not always, but often enough that it is worth naming. That does not excuse the pattern. It does not mean the conversation was unnecessary. It means that silence, however understandable, carries a cost. The conversation you keep delaying is the one that could clear the ground. You deserve a sustainable working life. You will not get it by waiting for someone to notice the problem. You get it by naming it clearly, asking for what you need, and holding the line with respect and quiet strength. A work-life boundary conversation done well is not an act of defiance. It is an act of professional self-respect. And in my experience, the managers worth working for will recognize it as exactly that. Frequently asked questions. What is a work-life boundary violation at work? A work-life boundary violation occurs when a manager or employer encroaches on your personal time through after-hours calls, weekend messages, or expectations that you remain available outside contracted hours. Over time, these patterns erode recovery time focus and long-term performance. How do you start a difficult conversation about work-life boundaries with your manager? Start by requesting a private, scheduled meeting rather than raising the issue in passing. Prepare a specific example of the pattern you want to address, state its impact clearly, and frame the conversation around sustainable performance rather than personal grievance. What do you say to a manager who expects constant availability? Say something direct and non-accusatory, such as, I want to talk about how we handle out-of-hours contact. I find it hard to recharge when I'm reachable at all times, and I want to find a system that works for both of us. How do you set boundaries with a manager without damaging the relationship? Focus on impact and solutions, not blame. Name the specific pattern, explain what it costs you, and offer a clear alternative. Managers respond better to problem-solving than to grievance. Keeping the tone professional and forward-looking protects the relationship while still making your needs clear. What if your manager dismisses your concerns about availability? Stay calm and return to specifics. Describe the exact pattern and its effect on your output. If dismissal continues, consider putting your proposed agreement in writing after the conversation. This creates a record and signals you're serious without escalating unnecessarily. Is it appropriate to raise work-life boundary issues with a senior manager or HR? If a direct conversation with your manager produces no change after a reasonable period, escalating to HR or a senior manager is appropriate. Document the pattern, the conversation you had, and the outcome before escalating. Approach it as seeking guidance, not lodging a complaint. Thank you for listening. If this article helped, the best-selling book Say It Right Every Time will take you the rest of the way. 115 scripts ready to use whenever you need them. Visit emonblackthorne.com to get your copy.